Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world.
Simple, I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, here's Jim Coyle.
Hey, everybody, welcome aboard another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio coming at you on this Tuesday as we are in early October and the great weather we have been having, at least in the South Central Indiana area, has given way to some rain showers. That's okay. That's part of it. But things are looking pretty green out there. Hope you're having a good start to your week, as not quite halfway in it or through it this week. But looking forward to another fun show. Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News will join us, as will Bill Bender, the senior football writer, will join us as well. So looking forward to that as well. And of course, Indiana and Oregon going at it this weekend. We'll be talking about that and other things involved with the Big Ten and the SEC. Monday Night Football last night. Did you see that game? The Jaguars and Colts fans, beware the Jaguars, a team that Indiana has had trouble with on the road. But Trevor Lawrence leading them to a pretty big win last night over the Kansas City Chiefs, leaving the Chiefs with a 2-2 record. But that final touchdown, if you happen to be watching, I don't think I've ever seen a quarterback fall down. He didn't really fall down twice, I guess. He didn't fall down. I think it was the guard or the center, I can't remember, but someone stepped on his foot as he's stepping back, and boom, he goes to the ground. This is on a crucial, the crucial game-winning play, by the way. He goes down to the ground after stumbling backwards, tries to get up, falls down again, but manages to then get up, escape a tackle out of the pocket, and then race to the end zone for the game-winning score. Crazy. As the Jaguars end up knocking off the Kansas City Chiefs, and I watched it via my favorite version through the Eli and Peyton broadcast portion of the broadcast. I love listening to the guys being funny instead of the normal broadcast. But hey, man, it brought to mind another thing. Every game, and I think that they made mention of this in the maybe in that broadcast, but how so many NFL games have been like one-score games, I think. There was like seven of them. Oh, it was comebacks. There were like seven games that were big comebacks this week alone, and it just goes to what I've been saying about sports in general. College football, for one thing. Last season, never saw a better season. This season, same thing. There is such parity now. The SEC is a model of parity. No one, there's not a great team in the SEC, but there's a hell of a lot of good ones. Now, the Big Ten is not caught up. The Big Ten has a couple of really good teams, but not a lot of good ones. My question is Indiana one of those really good teams? Maybe. It may be the case. And we'll find out this week as they travel to Eugene, Oregon. As long as they are, as long as that's a four-quarter game, I think you have to put Indiana in that category of being a really, really good football team. And I believe they are because they're so good on both sides of the ball. Andy says on the commenting, and you could do so if you're following along on our YouTube channel, Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Jim, I think there should be some real reporting on IU basketball. Is it falling behind on NIL? There is an increasing possibility of missing out on Anthony Thompson, Latrell Allman. Well, first of all, who says that Indiana has fallen behind? Is there any proof to this? Any substantial proof, number one. Number two, do you want a team, or does Darren DeVries want a team of guys built on the guys you have to pay, that you have to give the most to? That it comes down to, if we're talking, if you're making $1 million or $2 million, which I don't know, which it could be either of those. You know, does this come down to $100,000? Which, that's a lot of money, I'm not going to lie. But at some point, you have to decide, are these the guys I want on my team? Are these the guys that I think I can count on? So there may be some of that also. A lot goes on. But, you know, there is no real reporting on these NIL money numbers. Nobody is doling that information out. And it is very hard to find. Fred wishing John Mellencamp a happy birthday. 74 years old. How about that? Can you believe that? Why is it? I hate to say, isn't it hard to believe? Because that's how you, well, if you're in TV, you'd end up on Kimmel saying, can you believe it's August? Can you believe it? Can you believe it? Because there's just a plethora of, yeah, I can believe it. It comes around every damn year. It's the same time. It happens once a year on this same day. But, yeah, Eddie Van Halen, I heard that. I could not believe Eddie Van Halen has been gone 5 years. Now that, Brian, I agree, was a little shocking when I heard it. But that just goes to show you how all of us don't value time, our time, as we should. I'm the same way. And it is amazing, because we just start taking life for granted, I guess, and it just slips away. So, yeah, value it, baby. Value it every day. Again, yeah, what a graceful win for the Jaguars last night. Hey, isn't it Prime Day or something today and tomorrow? It's a big deal. And thinking about this Indiana-Oregon game, this is a gigantic matchup. First of all, it's a top 10 matchup, in which I think this is a true top 10 matchup. This is not one of these AP poll bull pretenders. This is a true, because we're deep into the season. This is week seven? Yeah, week seven. These teams have proven that they're good. Now, it's going to be extraordinarily difficult to go out to Autzen Stadium in Eugene, Oregon, where it only holds 54,000. But, again, the design, it's a complete bowl, helps keep the sound, echoes from echoing, and it's built in a mountainside, man. So, helps that they are able to make that noise a lot louder. And you've got people in both end zones, as opposed to Indiana doesn't really. They kind of do on the north side, but in the south side, you've got those suites and some people that are standing up on that balcony deal, but it's not quite as loud. Brian says, no one is giving IU a chance. It's going to be hard, but they have a chance. Yeah, they have a chance, but I've got to be honest with you. Do I expect Indiana to go out there and win that game? No. But can they? Sure. They can. Yeah, I don't think it's impossible, but I don't expect Indiana to win that game. That would mean I expect that Indiana is better than Oregon, possibly better than Ohio State. I don't know. Can they be? Sure. But we don't know. And if you don't believe about not knowing, these the preseason AP poll is, we all know that it's worthless. It is completely pointless. And if it's ever been proven to be so, it's been done so this season. In the preseason AP poll, you had Texas at number one. You had Penn State at number two. And Clemson at number four. Three out of your top four teams in the preseason are no longer even ranked. They're not even in the poll. So all those people, Heather Dinich, the IU grad who is not friendly to IU, picked Penn State to win the national championship. So, and I'm not doing that to call people out, but it's just to show that, you know what? Just, that's why it's great to see that the college football playoff committee waits. They wait to make that decision. They wait to get as much information as possible, rightly so, and so they don't look nearly as off, per se, as the preseason guys did. Well, the Rose Bowl, which served as kind of Kurt Cignetti's coronation a year ago when they went to UCLA and got that big road win for Kurt Cignetti in his first Big Ten action, will that also be the beginning, the impetus for the exit of James Franklin? Very possible. And the Marion County prosecutor is charging former NFL player and likely former Fox broadcaster Mark Sanchez with public intoxication and felony battery involved in that altercation with the 69-year-old man that was working, that was over a parking spot, allegedly. And Sanchez was allegedly maybe seen running wind sprints in this alley. So, well, the story just keeps getting better. So he's drunk, he's running wind sprints in an alley, and he gets into a fight with an old man. Boy, that's how you wrap it up. Hey, let's hit a break. Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News joins us next. Kick it all off, back with more on Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio. On this Tuesday, joined by the great Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News. Michael, how are you, sir?
I am doing well, Jim. How are you?
If I was any better, I'd be you, my friend. I just enjoying the day. I got some rain coming in, which is actually fine. I was kind of getting sick and tired of that beautiful sunny weather. It was getting a little boring, so we mixed it up a little bit. But watched another great finish to an NFL game last night, although crazy. I don't know if you saw the end of that
game. I did.
I'm like, I've never seen a quarterback fall down. He didn't really fall down twice, but I guess he did. He tried to get up. And someone stepped on his foot initially, and I'm like, usually that's it. You're like, oh, this play's blown up. No, he gets up, falls down again. This definitely does. Nope. Gets up, escapes the tackle, and scores. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Everything went the Jaguars' way. And the Jaguars, sneaky 4-1 now, 2 4-1 teams along with the Colts in this division. And, man,
after week one, or maybe week two, whatever it was, like a couple weeks into the season, the AFC South looked like a disaster. And now you've got Jacksonville at 4-1. Of course, Indy wasn't part of that disaster. They look like the lone survivor. And then Houston comes in to Baltimore, and I thought that Baltimore gave up. I thought they surrendered in that game. A lot of the guys on that field just did not play it to the end, as they say. And it was interesting because they panned through, they panned over the stadium, Jim. And if you think the players gave up, that stadium probably had by the mid to late fourth quarter, there were probably less than 1,000 people left in it.
Yeah, It's just amazing, but especially when when it's against the Chiefs, who that's usually who does that to everybody
else. Oh yeah, yes.
That was not to be the case. And hey, the NFL, they showed a stat. There were like 7 games with comebacks in double digits, and which is amazing. And then you've got these great finishes, but you've got the same thing in college football for a completely different reason. So it's weird to see both of these things happen at the same time, and they can't be related.
Yeah, I mean, they're just different. And I think the NFL was kind of a microburst, so to speak. It was a isolated deal. All those double digit comebacks. I think that just was an interesting weekend in the NFL. But we're seeing a real sea change in college football that I predicted would happen. I didn't think it would entail UCLA coming in winless and beating Penn State. But I knew there would be somewhat of a homogenization in college football because of the transfer portal. And NIL fueling the transfer portal, more guys would say, I'm not sitting here if I can go play there and make money. Sitting here isn't necessarily getting me ready for the real money in the NFL, so I'll go there and I'll play. And that's happening all through the sport. And so you're going to have teams that lose a couple of games and still are championship contenders, real championship contenders, not just playoff entrants, but championship contenders. And this is going to be an unpopular outlandish statement, but Penn State's not done. I mean, they may be done. They're done if they don't go out and beat Ohio State, but they're not done until that game happens, or they lose somewhere along the way to Columbus. Iowa would be an example. But to say that's it is not being cognizant of the current landscape. They have two elite opportunities now because of what the Hoosiers have done. They have two elite opportunities to get wins back. Now, they can't lose any other games now. They have changed the dynamics for themselves by going out to UCLA and losing. But we see this in college basketball all the time, and we are used to it, Jim. We understand it. We understand how it works now. If you lose a home game like Illinois last year, lost a home game on BTN to Southern California at that point. And USC was not playing well and didn't end up playing well. And so it was a bad loss. So you have to go out and win some games against teams that you weren't expected to win. And that's how it works now in college football. If you take a loss like this, everybody wants to fire the coach and everybody wants to quit on the team. And they very well may be done, but they're not officially done until they get to the Ohio State game, presumably with no other losses, and either win or lose that one. And they're probably not going to win that game if they do get there undefeated. But that doesn't mean it can't happen.
Yeah, and it wasn't quite that way for the Cardinals and Coach Jonathan Gannon after Imare DiMarcato did. We've had this like 2 weeks in a row. And we've seen it before. I don't know how this is ever possible again, but drops the ball just before crossing the goal line. I mean, literally, and you could see it. He let go of the ball before he crossed the goal line and started to flip it. I'm like, why would you ever even come close to that? He got ripped. He was being consoled by a teammate, and then the coach came over and ripped him, and the coach apologized for it. But he deserved to be ripped. He's a professional paid athlete. That was a winning. That cost him the game.
What other sport do we do this, Jim? Let me ask you that. Like, if you hit a home run and you do your whole dance around and all that, you know, like, one, you know, bat flip and all that, you still touch home plate, for goodness sakes.
I was going to say, yeah, what, do you stop running after third base?
Yeah, I mean, I have said, and I was 10 or 11 years old when the Steelers made their first ever appearance on Monday Night Football. I believe it was against the Chiefs, if I remember correctly. And a wide receiver named Dave Smith held up the ball as he was about to cross the goal line. The ball slipped out of his hand, and no touchdown for the Steelers. Dave Smith was not with the Steelers when they started winning Super Bowls, I'll tell you that. I don't know if they were connected or not, because Lynn Swann came to town, et cetera, et cetera. But it still was an indelible memory for someone who was watching that game. and how you could not see that and say to yourself, you know what? I'm going to cross the goal line and I'm going to spike the ball, or I'm going to hand it to the ref, or whatever you're going to do with it. But I'm going to be way into the end zone before I even think about letting the ball out of my hands. I don't care what you do with it. I don't care if you kick it in the stands like TJ Watt did after they had an interception against the Vikings, or you hand it to someone wearing your jersey in the end zone, or hand it to the ref, or spike it, or give it to your teammate to spike it, or whatever. But you're way in the end zone when you do that. This stuff at the goal line is garbage, and any player who does it deserves whatever consequence there is, within obviously bounds of good taste. But in terms of harangue, why not? Why do you have to apologize for that?
I agree. I think he probably apologized for doing it on national TV, but who cares? That's what you, man.
He didn't know he was on national TV, did he?
It doesn't matter.
He's being working the game. He's not thinking, where's the camera before I harangue the guy who just cost me 7 points?
Yeah, it was crazy. The Colts, man, they continue to play unbelievable football, putting up numbers we have not seen. What does that continue? We'll see. But unfortunately for them, they're in the same division as the Jaguars, who has had the Colts number, as someone pointed out a minute ago. And yes, they have. But the Colts have broken a lot of streaks this year already. They've got off of the schneid on not winning their opening game since Moby Dick was a minnow. They knocked that one out of the park. Now they're putting up more numbers in the first three, and I guess now five games than Peyton Manning did in his era, which is nuts to see them put up another 40 spot after they had already set these kind of records. Great to see for Colts fans. Can this continue? Well, as long as they stay healthy. But, man, Jonathan Taylor been a huge part of this. But the funny thing is there was so much chatter about, well, who's going to be the starting quarterback? Oh, and when he went with Daniel Jones. Oh, my God. I think it's kind of working out okay.
Well, it's interesting because when they made the decision to not go with Anthony Richardson, the decision was the news and the commentary was all focused on Anthony Richardson. And I wrote a column about that as well. Not necessarily in the same vein, but more to the idea of rushing young quarterbacks onto the field before they're ready and how it tends to ruin the player more often than not. The Ben Roethlisberger types, the Peyton Manning types, those guys are rare. The most successful quarterbacks usually sit for much or all of their rookie years. The guys who get rushed onto the field on bad teams, it just doesn't work. And that, so now you see guys like Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold sort of being recycled. We didn't used to see that. They used to be ruined and they were over. But the talent is there. They just not need to get into circumstances where they understand how to work with a quarterback and how to give them weapons around them and protection and all that. But Daniel Jones, Danny Dimes, or Indiana Jones, or whatever you want to call him these days, is an example of that. The Giants rushed him on the field. It didn't work. It kind of worked 1 year, but then it didn't work again. And what he really needed was just to be on a team that understood how to win, that had some idea of how to win. And the Colts haven't been great lately, but they've never been as bad as the Giants are consistently. It's a good organization, and they know how to put a winning product on the field. They've done it on multiple occasions in the past and the recent past. And so Jones, who I like a lot, and when he was a free agent, he was a guy that I would not at all have minded the Steelers signing. He's very mobile. He's very aggressive with his running when it's necessary. He's not an elite thrower in terms of his passing, but he's an excellent thrower. I mean, he may not be the absolute, Aaron Rodgers in his prime kind of player, but he's a very sound thrower. I think he just needed a circumstance where he was surrounded by terrific players, and he is surrounded by terrific players: Tyler Warren, Alec Pierce, Taylor, as you mentioned. They got a lot of guys that can play, and so it works. And that's that the cycle in the NFL that the Jets go through and the Giants go through and some other teams, they bring it on themselves because they don't understand how to build from the trenches out. They bring in a Daniel Jones or someone like that or Trey Lance, and they say, okay, go figure it out, and it doesn't work. And the lucky ones like Daniel Jones find a organization that knows how to do it, and they ultimately get the success that they're capable of.
What's more surprising, the first place Pittsburgh Steelers in the AFC North at 3-1, or the last place Baltimore Ravens at 1-4?
Yeah, well, the Ravens are way more surprising, Jim. Now they have had an injury.
Wow.
Obviously.
Where the hell does that come from?
They've had a lot of injuries. There's no doubt. But other teams have had injuries and have had to try to find a way to survive them. I mean, they haven't all lost Lamar Jackson, who may be the most, he's certainly the most dynamic player in the league, and he may be the most valuable player in the league. He has been an MVP twice. So they're missing something there, but it's their own fault for putting Cooper Rush as his backup. They're not playing the same game, Jim. Why would you do that? Look, there is no other Lamar Jackson. I totally get that, right? I mean, Lamar Jackson's the most dynamic player that's ever played the quarterback position on the planet, ever. But the idea that you would bring in a guy who is immobile and not a great thrower and not able to get out of trouble and put him into the same offense, even if you tweak it a little bit, it's just the math doesn't add up. I don't understand what they were thinking, but it's led them, among other things, it's led them to just a disastrous 1-4 start. And I believe they have the Rams at home this weekend. So they'll have to play great to not start 1-5.
Yeah. And what was I going to Oregon State? They're 0-6. So to deal with that, they fired their special teams coach.
The Pac-12 is back, baby. Oh, Oregon boy. State's 0-6, man. I would say that there are a lot of teams out there that are struggling in college football now, and the money is tight in certain places, and I think that you feel like there's something you need to do. I don't know the circumstance behind why they chose him of all the staff members that they had that they could have made a change with, but they've got a lot of work to get back to being what had been a really fine Pac-12 program. When they were in the real Pac-12, for the most part, they were a plus program. They had some really good teams, but they've fallen far off, and it's not going to be an easy road back in the new Pac-12.
No, it will not be. We talk a lot about how pointless the preseason polls are. I don't think they have never been more pointless in football especially. I think football is harder than basketball. You can get a sense in basketball, at least. In football, obviously not. The people that voted in the preseason, that voted Texas number one, that voted Penn State number two, and voted Clemson number four, all of which are not even in the current poll. I don't know that has ever happened, but it also shows that this is nothing but a gigantic guess and a bigger waste of time, personally, because while things kind of wash out as the season goes on, as they have, the college football committee, playoff committee, smart thing, they don't even start putting their first one out until what, the eighth week or seventh week or something like that after this week.
And Jim, even theirs is just a show. Let's be honest. It really is.
It's still, because we still don't know. We don't know who's the best team in the SEC. There, how long has it been? How many years? There's no way a year ago we didn't have an answer to that. A year before that, which I know we're getting into a different era, but we understood, we kind of knew that I'm going to have to say it's Georgia, or, you know, if it was Alabama, you know, whoever it was, you'd have a great indication. Right now, you're like, maybe it's Ole Miss, but I don't know that because the SEC has great parity right now. I don't think that they have a single great team. They have a bunch of good ones, as opposed to the Big Ten, which I think might have three really good teams, but then nothing.
I'm not buying a drop off. Yeah,
right?
But only because those teams have found a way to separate themselves. Ohio State, most obviously, Indiana. I don't buy that there's not good solidity in the middle of the Big Ten. I think Maryland's a very good team. I think Nebraska's a dangerous team. Nebraska defeated Cincinnati in a very competitive game. What's Cincinnati done since? But tear through Cincinnati the Big 12.
And a Brendan Sorsby, the former IU quarterback, is one of the tops in the country. I mean, he is unbelievable year. So shout out to the former Indiana guy, man. He is doing it and having fun. And I think the only game they lost was it to Nebraska? Did they lose that game?
Yeah, that's the only loss they have. They've beaten Kansas. They took out Iowa State and handled them pretty well at home on Saturday. So my point is that there is quality in the Big Ten, in the middle of the Big Ten. Michigan is playing very well. SC, those are all very capable
teams.
Well,
I thought that they were, but we can't get – USC is not getting that solid win. I was really curious as what would happen with them in Illinois. And Illinois, of course, it was a walk-off win, so that game could have gone either way. I think that both of those teams needed that game desperately to maintain a position of you know, hey, we're decent, because there just are few teams that are ranked in the top 25 right now, other than the top three.
You just said, don't pay attention to the polls.
I know that the polls they're skewed. There's no doubt. Yes. They're skewed. They're bias skewed. Missouri probably not being recognized, even though they're in the SEC the way they should. Missouri might be one of the best teams in the SEC. I don't know yet. They have a wicked schedule. We'll sure find out. But at least I love the parity in the SEC because man, oh man, you don't know. It's not fun when you're like, well, yeah, they're pretty much surely going to win this game. And they do. I love seeing the unknown. But Indiana, for them to be in a position to be one of the teams that I honestly believe could be one of the best in the country, that's amazing. And then, of course, this weekend, if you thought of the two coaches that any athletics director would say yes to in a heartbeat if you could have them, is there any way that Kurt Cignetti and Dan Lanning would not be those top two coaches right now?
They're both terrific. They're both outstanding. They've both done great work. And not just in building the programs, but executing. Because Lanning took Oregon out to Penn State a couple of Saturdays ago and won a very difficult game. They execute. They very rarely leave their best game in the film room. They get ready and they go out and play well. And it's the same for Kurt. Jim, I will tell you, I just looked at it. There are 9 teams in the Big Ten that are undefeated or have one loss. So I don't see any reason why I should believe without evidence that Washington lost to Ohio State. Who's not losing to Ohio State right now? Maybe Indiana,
Washington
who knows?
Has a good offense. Washington has a really good offense. They are greatly improved. I'm shocked at how, I'll be honest with you, I'm most shocked at the improvement of Purdue.
Purdue's played very competitively, absolutely. I think it's a quality league. Now, I mean, it's hard to know for sure how good in the absence of more non-conference competition. And again, that goes back to what we talked about weeks ago, that the Big Ten needs to get that automatic P4 non-conference game on their schedule for the future, as every other league, at least I don't know if the Big 12 has said that, but I know the ACC and SEC have said we're doing that now. Big Ten needs to move in that direction, because rather than sit here and look at the rankings and see no Big Ten teams and say, well, they must not be very good. When you see, like what I said before, that they have They have some quality wins outside the league. They're playing pretty high quality football, but they didn't take as much of a chance to prove that outside the league as the SEC did. Although the SEC's was mitigated by the fact that they're not proving it as much inside the league because they're only playing 8 conference games this year. The Big Ten teams, by the time they get to the end of November, will have been through a real slog. I think that there are 8 to 10 high-quality football teams, not national championship contenders, but high-quality football teams that you got to show up and play. And, hey, what did this weekend show if not that you better show up and play, even if you're going to the Rose Bowl to play an 0-4 UCLA team. You got to show up and play, and if you don't, you're going to lose.
Let's take a quick break. The great Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News with us, back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Tuesday. The great Mike DeCourcy with me. And Mike, kind of following up on the Big Ten SEC. This is by Heather Denich, who, although an IU grad, not Big Ten favorite. She does not... being at ESPN, I think if everyone at ESPN has drank the SEC Kool-Aid, and I really mean that, because Kirk Herbstreit was pushing John Mateer for the Heisman, I think, before the season even started, and just relentless about it. But right now, according to her article, which there is some truth to it, if the playoff were today, in the CFP would be Alabama, Georgia, Oklahoma, which... Oklahoma's a question mark for me because they don't have John Mateer.
Right.
Florida State just got absolutely hammered because of that, but yet Oklahoma is allowed to continue, and because they played no one last week in Kent State and wiped them, that it didn't affect them any. But Ole Miss, Tennessee, and Texas A&M, they're saying, would be in the CFP, a record 6 teams. For the Big Ten, it would just be Indiana, Ohio State, and Oregon. Right now,
it's nonsense.
Well, but who else would be in? Penn State's not, because,
well, no, but that, like I said, Michigan could be in, SC could be in. You've got, I mean, Illinois, okay, so they got destroyed by Indiana, but they haven't lost any other games. You just don't know. It's way too premature, and that's my point, is that they're looking at poll rankings, and poll rankings don't mean anything. They don't mean anything. What will it look like in the SEC in another 3 weeks? What will it look like in the Big Ten in another 3 weeks? I have no idea. We don't know.
The SEC is definitely going to be a meat grinder because, like I mentioned, Missouri, well, they host Alabama this week. That's a decider right there. That will kind of put you, you're either raised up a notch or pushed down a notch by winning or losing that game. I can't wait for that game. That's going to be, because the Vanderbilt game was relatively close the whole time at Alabama. So, right. Man, I know a lot of people getting, for the Alabama fans, they're on Kalen DeBoer's biz, but it's a different era. This is not the era where Nick Saban, I'll go ahead and say it, had a lot of high paid recruits, most likely, and Jimbo Fisher, when he was called out by Nick Saban for buying the best team in the country or whatever, and he quipped up and said one thing, and all of a sudden Nick Saban went bloop, didn't say a word, because he knows where the skeletons are buried. So all that stuff didn't happen on a clean sheet. But regardless of that, with all that, though, I still think the Big Ten has the 3 best teams in the country. Indiana yet to be determined, but I'm going to include them in until they're proven otherwise. I think Oregon is definitely, they might be the number one team. It could be Ohio State. I mean, I guess you got to leave the king until he's dethroned, but Oregon looks very good. And Indiana has done remarkable things. You go on the road to win at Iowa, you crush a top 10 Illinois like they did.
I just, as in parting, Jim, I'll just say that it shouldn't be about brand. It should be about achievement. As I mentioned, the Big Ten did leave some on the field, so to speak, by not playing, in general, a more challenging non-conference schedule. Penn State's a great example of that. Wouldn't they love to have had some prep to play Oregon against a better opponent than they managed? And two, wouldn't they love to have a high quality victim on their resume as they try to rebuild their reputation? But in general, I think it shows that we're way too quick to make up our minds about who's good and who's not, when the college football landscape has completely changed and it's not like it used to be. Just let it play out a little bit. We'll see. If SC beats Michigan this weekend, that's a heck of a win. If Michigan beats SC on the road, that's a huge win. We just don't know where it's going. I think we end up with at least four Big Ten teams by the end of the year, maybe five SECs as well. It's a great year for the league. But I just don't think it's as simple and cut and dried as what the polls are telling you.
I agree. Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News, thank you, sir. We appreciate you. Enjoy your week. We'll talk to you next week after this game and find out what happened.
All right, Jim, take care.
You betcha. Mike DeCourcy joining us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. He had to bust out early today for he's on assignment now. So there you go. But yeah, I agree. I mean, it's today is today, and man, does it change. You've got a lot of big time games. Missouri has a wicked schedule coming up. And it starts this weekend with Alabama that puts it on their, on them. They already have a loss to their name, and it was to a team that has taken a beating, Florida State. So man, it's just going to be fun to watch this stuff play out. The ACC, they have sucked the last few years, but not this year. You've got Georgia Tech, who is undefeated. Who'd they beat? Clemson? Which doesn't look as good as now. But Virginia, they go on the road and beat Louisville, and they're looking good. Then you've got Miami, who is definitely in. So the ACC probably gets two teams in this year. But the ironic thing is Virginia is one of those teams with listed as work to do. The Big 12, the BYU, they're undefeated. The Cougs, they're on a collision course with Texas Tech to play for the Big Ten title. Texas Tech, also one of the teams that is thought to be in right now already. So they'll probably get two teams in. BYU, I don't think Arizona State's going to make it. Cincinnati, they're one loss away from probably being in right now. That loss to Nebraska, man, they're playing very well. Notre Dame's out. Out, baby. The Irish have a case to be the selection committee's top two-loss team, and they're doing everything right to make the slow climb back into the conversation, per ESPN. No team in the country has a better chance to win out because of their schedule at 42.2%. One of the biggest criticisms of the Irish and their back-to-back season-opening losses was the defense, which had allowed Texas A&M 41 points. And they want to talk about the Notre Dame hasn't allowed more than 13 of each of its last two wins. Well, who have you played? Who have you played? They've got a tough game against USC coming up, but that's at home. So I don't know, man. Notre Dame could get squeezed out because the ACC, I think, will definitely get two teams in. The Big 12 get two teams in. I think at the end of the day, the Big Ten might get four teams in. They're kind of in the position the SEC was last year. SEC is going to get five teams in. I don't think that there's a doubt of that because of that parity, because you can't determine between one and five is probably going to be relatively close. Indiana, Oregon, Ohio State, I think, make it into the Big Ten. Now, what happens if Indiana loses at Oregon and Penn State? The Penn State loss will look a little worse now than it would have. after they lost, after Penn State lost at UCLA, which just, that's just the biggest loss in college football in a few years, in my opinion. I'm trying to think who, which I know what happens and we kind of forget about it, but in the Big Ten, man, I haven't seen that. How did UCLA manage to do that? I think a big part of it was Penn State. It was not what I would have considered to be a trap game, but it turned out to be a trap game. Had UCLA been a normal team that hadn't had to fire their coach and all of that and had everything new, that would have been a, you would have considered that a trap game. But there's no way when they hadn't won a game and they were in complete total disarray. But that shows you also, to me, the disarray that was under Deshaun Foster, which I thought was obvious from the beginning. You could tell. I mean, I hate to go back and say that when he was first introduced to Big Ten Media Days and he tells everybody that UCLA is in Los Angeles, if that was a joke, it would have been funny. It wasn't a joke. He was serious. He didn't know what else to say. He's not a good speaker. And you don't have to be a world-class speaker to be a good football coach, but you have to be able to communicate what you're doing, what you're trying to do. That was obvious to me that that was not the case with Deshaun Foster. So I'm going to imagine there was nothing but disarray in what was going on there, how things were being put together, game plans. There probably weren't really game plans, but I'm just guessing. But it's hard to imagine a coach that made the turnaround. UCLA obviously already has their next football coach. And their interim defensive coordinator, I'm going to take credit, Kevin Coyle, an interim offensive coordinator, Jerry Neuheisel, step up and do what they did. Get the Bruins to do what they did. It's unbelievable. Their new skipper is Tim Skipper. I think they already have their staff in place, ready to go. What happens to them the rest of this season? I mean, you're pretty far in now at, what are they, 1-5? So a bowl season is probably off the table, but man, you've created some excitement in a place that had nothing. Not bad. Not bad. Hey, we've got more coming up later on. Bill Bender's going to join us from the Sporting News, their football senior writer. We'll get his intake on what things that are coming up. And anything else he might have to say about the college game. See what he thinks about the Big Ten. Indiana's, man, it's going to be a tough road out there, but we'll talk more about Indiana and Oregon and as well. You've got two Heisman quarterbacks going at it. A big, big matchup. We're back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along for the ride. Keep it locked on the radio station. You got it on throughout the day for great continued sports coverage and commentary. No matter where you are. And if you're following on social media, please do the deals. Hit the subscribe and like buttons and let us know that you're following us. Hey, and for those of you, I'm curious, how many of you actually have a subscription to thehoosier.com? It is, without question, the go-to site as far as inside information, as far as daily information on both Indiana football and basketball. The coverage is unbelievable on the local level, and that does not even include on the national level, which is immense. There's some things coming soon, some more big announcements with thehoosier.com as they have, or On3, have part of the On3 network, continue to just do things to make it better and better. Along with your subscription to thehoosier.com, you get a subscription to The Athletic, which I read a lot, as well as On Three. Between those two, it's just an immense amount of information and gets you up to date on everything. More importantly, it is a great help to us. But if you're a subscriber to thehoosier.com, it allows us to bring the coverage to you that we do. I mean, travel and getting all of that stuff, it's not free, man. It is not free, and that's what it goes for. So please be a subscriber to thehoosier.com. You can check it out for just $1, and you get it for 50% off for your entire first year, in addition to a subscription to The Athletic and everything else that comes with the On3 network. So do us a favor. Go to thehoosier.com right now while you're listening and subscribe. It's an easy deal, and it's like $5 a month is what it comes out to. So appreciate you. John says, Brian, what does Brett Russell thinks that Notre Dame needs to direct snap to Love if they want to win? Well, I'm sure that's going to take more than just direct snapping to a player to get a win for Notre Dame. But yeah, college football, man, it's going to, I think it's going to have another great diverse season this year in the college football playoffs. I still think the Big Ten is going to win the national championship. Jason, are you saying you don't have the Hoosier.com? Well, then shame on you. You should. But I don't know if that's what you're saying or not. Doug, how are you, sir? I hope you're having a great day. But yeah, we're going to have great parity with teams like Texas Tech, probably BYU in the group of five. You're probably going to get Memphis in, which, they're nice, but I don't think they can compete on this level. ACC, you've got Miami, which is a dangerous team and a potential national championship caliber team. So, ironically, one of the weaker conferences, the ACC, has a team that very possible could win it all. Part of that is the fact that they've got the former Georgia quarterback who has played extraordinarily well for Miami, and they have been very good. The Big Ten, who's the fourth team that gets in? I do think that they'll ultimately get four teams, but it depends on how they, like Michigan. Michigan's is the most likely because it says Michigan here. And bringing Michigan means you bring Michigan fans to the TV audience and to the games. And if you don't think that's important, you're nuts. There was a post out the other day from Brett McMurphy that said he didn't think Indiana made the CFP, which I thought was ridiculous in and of itself. But if that they didn't make it, that they wouldn't even get the top Big Ten bowl game because he also had Michigan not making it. But I agree with that because those bowl committees have their choice on who to take from a conference. If they were both 10-2, Indiana and Michigan State or Michigan, and they don't play each other, no tiebreaker, then they would get the choice. Well, who do you think they're going to pick? They're going to pick Michigan every day and twice on Sunday because of the crowd they will bring. Indiana's not going to bring a road crowd. I'm sorry. While, there'll be some knives and there'll be a nice group out in Eugene. Don't get me wrong. There are some fans that are going to travel. But for a major bowl game like that, I don't know how well Indiana will travel. There's always been a hardcore group that traveled, and I use this as an example, and it may not be fair, but the Gator Bowl when they played Tennessee a few years back, I was really impressed with the turnout by Indiana, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. Right up until we walked into the stadium And at that time, everything changed for me because Indiana had like two full sections that was red, but the rest of the stadium was orange. And I'm like, oh my. So now that was a different time, different era. And I know it would be better, but I just don't know how good it would be. But that's why they would take Michigan over Indiana if that were the case. I don't think that's going to be anything to worry about. I think Indiana makes the college football playoffs. Even if they were to lose to Penn State on the road, I still think that they get in because the body of their work. But it's going to be interesting. Indiana needs to play four quarters against Oregon without question. This is their third opportunity to really show. I mean, Iowa was nice, tough road win, but this is a big time matchup here. This is a top 10 matchup, top 7 matchup, to be honest with you. And Indiana they need to show that they belong in that game. Now, it's going to be tough. It's on the road. The expectations are not for Indiana to win. If they win, that's gigantic. I'm not saying they can't. The expectation is not that they will win this game. Let's be honest. But they don't have to. But they do have to play. They have to show up. And I don't think that that's going to be an issue because Indiana's defense is good. What are they going to be able to do with Dante Moore? I mean, he's a Heisman Trophy, a legit Heisman Trophy candidate. But you've got Fernando Mendoza, who's also a legit Heisman candidate. This is a major, major game. I already mentioned Kurt Cignetti and Dan Lanning, probably two of the hottest coaching names in all of college football right now. Then you have Fernando Mendoza and Dante Moore. Another gigantic storyline. Then you have two top 7 teams. Two of the top 3 best teams in the best conference, in the conference that has the best teams going at it. So, Devil does not think BYU, I've seen him play very little. I'll be honest with you. He doesn't think they're going to the playoff, says they're not very good. Yeah, we'll see. Things, you know, as the year goes on, that's the thing, man. Things change. Doug likes Sig's road plan to leave Friday and be home on Saturday. As a matter of fact, he met with the media yesterday, and I'll try to get that in here. Try to get it moved up to about exactly where I asked him about about going on the road. Let's hear what Kurt had to say.
You know, you really, I say it all the time, you prepare for them all the same. Otherwise, you'd be doing a disservice to your team if you're all in one game and not all in on another, right? So, from that standpoint, it's pretty much the same.
Zion, are you ready for back to this? When you mentioned maybe not being quite as big up front as Oregon is, how do you kind of combat that going into the game on Saturday?
Well, you put together the best plan for your team that you think gives you the best chance to be successful. But I have confidence in our team, right? They are big. They are athletic. They are a very good football team. We're a good football team. Dwell on the line.
Yeah, Kurt, he thinks that he acknowledges that Oregon is, they're big. They're just bigger. And they're bigger than Indiana. And there's no doubting that, especially on the offensive line.
And he had to have a certain look, and he'd look to the sideline, but we quit doing that after year two.
Oh, this is a great question, because I've wondered why Indiana does not have the ability to audible, especially in loud, when you're in loud environments. If you've got a 4th-and-1 play called and they've loaded the box, boy, it would be nice to be able to get out of that situation. But Apparently, that's not something Kurt Cignetti has done much of.
Any position in those games.
You mentioned after the Iowa game, you guys didn't really check out of things or let Fernando audible out of things because of the road environment and the crowd noise. Do you anticipate sort of the same line of thinking going to the Oregon game?
We've never been a check audible team, really, to be honest with you. Early on at JMU, maybe we'd send a play in, and he had to have a certain look, and he'd look to the sideline, but we quit doing that after year two. We don't do a lot of it. We talk about doing it at times, and we'll see what this week brings.
Zach, be in front, and Joe. You talked about after Iowa that Fernando passed that test in Iowa City. What will he need to show you this week to pass a test against Oregon?
Well, he made some outstanding throws against Iowa. I don't recall that exact comment. Left some plays out there, too, but he was under pressure quite a bit as well. You know, I just want Fernando, like the rest of the guys on the team, to relax and play their game. You know, we just got to go out there and play our game and play it well.
Joe on your left, and Josh.
Dan Lanning has one home loss to his name, and Autzen is an incredibly tough atmosphere. How much did that Iowa game, atmosphere-wise, kind of help in preparation to going out to Eugene?
Well, I think any time you do something the second time, it helps that you've been through it one time before. And Iowa was, you know, it was a sellout. It was loud. So to have that kind of preparation going into this game will help.
Coach, do you think that travel from last year to UCLA, you said you're keeping it mostly the same. Do you think that helps the guys who are returning and some of the guys who came in that they can combine together to figure it out?
There's not much to figure out. I mean, that's what we do every game. We get in about the same time in the evening, and we've got our routine. And it's just the way I like to do it.
Coach, what's your mindset like going into a big game like this on the road?
I mean, you know, I'm trying to get as much done today as possible and find the edge. And like every game, you know, you really, I say it all the time, you prepare for them all the same. Otherwise, you'd be doing a disservice to your team if you're all in one game and not all in on another, right? So from that standpoint, it's pretty much the same.
When you mentioned maybe not being quite as big up front as Oregon is, how do you kind of combat that going into the game on Saturday?
Well, you put together the best plan for your team that you think gives you the best chance to be successful. But I have confidence in our team, right? They are big. They are athletic. They are a very good football team. We're a good football team.
Is that your left, last one?
Kurt, do you have any update on the status of D'Angelo Pons and kind of when you watch the film, how do you think the secondary held up without him against Iowa?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I expect Pons to be fine and play. We found out late in the week he wouldn't be available for the Iowa game. So Coach Haynes took out the eraser and ink pen and game plan changed a little bit, played a little bit more zone than he was planning on playing going into the game. And I thought we did well. Thank you.
There was Coach Kurt Cignetti in some of his presser yesterday, Q&A with the media. I asked him about the travel and, you know, that we know that it plays a part, but that they had been through that last year with the UCLA game. But, you know, is there anything different? Does the time of the game matter? Because I believe from being out there last year, the UCLA game was late because it was dark when that game ended. This is a 3:30 game Eastern time, which makes it 12:30 out there on the coast. So it's going to make it a little bit different, but I think that they will try to just mitigate it by staying on your own time. Just you get out there, you ignore what time it is out there, and you go to bed at your normal time. You get up at your normal time and get ready to play because it's going to be a lot going on as well. CBS national TV audience. On top of that, you've got College Game Day that will be there as well. I don't know if Kurt Cignetti will have any interaction with that since it's a road game, and maybe he wants to stay focused on what he's doing. But if he did, it would probably be on the field like they do with some of the coaches early on. But, you know, they love to have some Cignetti on without question. And Jason says that Oregon is a lot louder than Iowa. And even though it is not quite half the size, it is a fact. They're known for noise, man. 127 decibels, I think, is their record with it, the capacity is around 54,000. But it's how this thing is. It's a bowl. And by bowl, I mean there are actual seats in each end zone and complete seats around, not, you know, some decorative stuff to look like it's filled in. It's just a complete bowl, but it also sits at the bottom of a hillside. And for whatever, it's kind of like Assembly Hall. You know, it's built to keep noise in or sound in. And it's going to be loud like it was for Indiana and Illinois, for Illinois, but louder. It will sound much louder than out there. How does Indiana handle that? Other than the snap, it doesn't seem to really, it shouldn't affect Indiana because they're not audibly, which I find it odd that a team at this high of level doesn't have that. I don't want to say capability, it's because it's obviously not a capability, but it's a choice that Kurt Cignetti has made, that he would rather things be the way that he would like for them to be. So there's that. Hey, we've got to take a break. Much more coming up. Bill Bender's going to join us later from the Sporting News, and we'll get his take on all things college football as he is the senior writer for the Sporting News. Much more coming up. Back with all that and more after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along. Getting ready for some big football this week. Of course, Indiana and Oregon in a top seven game day matchup on CBS in the afternoon. That's a 3:30 Eastern time kickoff for you folks. That's perfect. If you should be back here tailgating and all that, but man, doesn't give you a lot of time if you're out in Eugene, like I will be, to get around to the ESPN game day and all of that to cover all the pregame festivities. There's going to be a ton going on. The good thing is Indiana's not a part of that. You know, they can just stay away from all that. Kurt Cignetti will be focused on his team and getting his team correct or getting them ready to go, because they're going to have to play the game of his career. This is without question right now the biggest game of his career. It's the biggest game in IU football history now, because the Ohio State game, that opportunity's gone. Okay, the Notre Dame game, that opportunity's gone, but this opportunity is right here, and now it becomes a gigantic game. If even though they're not supposed to win this game, let's play devil's advocate and say Indiana beats Oregon at Oregon. First of all, I don't know that the poll writers would do it, but they would, at the minimum, vault Indiana to the highest point it's ever been ranked at number three, probably behind Miami, depending on what goes on this weekend. But winning at Oregon, well, that does a couple of things. It vaults Indiana into the category of stop doubting Indiana, people. Just stop. Quit with the, you know, what they used to be. That's gone. Nothing to do with this. It would also put Indiana on a direct collision course with playing for the Big Ten Championship in Indianapolis. It would put them on a collision course with a 12-0 season of course, a gigantic game at Penn State would follow, but that opportunity is there. Yeah, it would be crazy. But guess what? It's why they play the games. You saw what UCLA did to Penn State. Now, different situation. Penn State was just, man, they were obviously demoralized by that loss to Oregon. I think that James Franklin must have been demoralized, and it must have permeated throughout his team. And then you add that long-distance travel on top of that. Probably everybody on that team, including James Franklin, just overlooked UCLA. Hadn't won a game, fired everybody. There's no way that they're going to be in disarray. Well, they weren't. And they played their butts off. Something. Andrew pointing out, if Indiana were to beat the number two Oregon Ducks, you add that to a win over a number nine team, I think that would make Indiana the only team with two top 10 wins on the season at that point. Yeah, normally that probably would vault you to number one, but they're not going to vault over Ohio State. Ohio State, you have to dethrone the king. I just think that everybody is going to leave Ohio State there. But if they won that game and if they could get by Penn State, well, as Howard Schnellenberger once said,
Indiana University is on a collision course with a national championship. The only variable is time.
He said that about the University of Louisville, but always like bringing that out. But that possibility is there. Very tough road to hoe getting through Oregon. And I don't care what Penn State did at UCLA. That's going to be a tough game, people. It's not that it's not winnable. It is. But it's also losable. That's the same. That Penn State team that lost to UCLA, they lost mostly in the cabeza. That's the same team that took Oregon to overtime. It's not like they're not a good team. They are. They probably should still be in the top 25. I was shocked to see them drop all the way out. Wisconsin at USC. Buddy, that's a tough game for Michigan. They can't afford to lose, but neither can USC. So they need this game. They're at home. That would put them at 5-1 with a game at Notre Dame following. And if they could win that game, they still have Nebraska that they have to travel to, Northwestern and Iowa and Oregon. Man, USC's got a tough schedule. Tough schedule. If they're going to make the college football playoffs, they're going to have to beat some good teams. And then Purdue's at Minnesota for the whatever you want to call that game of the week. I'm not quite sure what you would call that. In the SEC, huge implications here. Alabama goes to Missouri. Missouri is statistically one of the best teams in the country. They are, they were, I think, top in defense the last time I looked. It's been a week or so since I looked. But let's see. I'm looking for total defense, but all right, let's just start with passing offense. Texas Tech, Baylor, Alabama's at number 5, Ole Miss is 6, Nebraska's at 8. I haven't seen IU yet. IU's 36th. Indiana is not as prolific passing this year because they have been prolific running the ball, but they have been very good throwing the ball. When you're averaging 270 yards through the air and you have 19 touchdowns, which I believe still leads the NCAA, pretty good. Pretty good. Yards per completion, pretty high at 13.6. And the completion percentage, where is that? I don't see it, but I know it's been like 73%. You add that to a rushing game that's averaging 300 yards? Man. Indiana has to run the ball this weekend against Oregon. They have to be able to run the ball to get the passing game going. Against Iowa, I was listening to Joel Klatt, who I like, but he said that in the Iowa game, Indiana only averaged like 2.1 yards per carry, and I'm not sure that I agree with that, because if you're taking into account that last play, well, you got to take that out of the equation. You know, what were they like the rest of the way? I'll try to pull up those stats in the break and see what they actually were against Michigan or against Iowa. Because I don't think that they were that bad. I think that you've got to take, if you take that game out, they ran the ball pretty well. Oh, I'm on the wrong month. That's why. But hey, we'll take a break. Bill Bender from the Sporting News is going to join us next. Appreciate you being with us on this Tuesday. We're back with more from Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along and happier to have Bill Bender again to join us from the Sporting News, football senior football writer for them. Mike was on with us earlier, Bill. He must be traveling. Looked like he was in a hotel somewhere, but no surprise to that. I know he's heading to Big Ten Media Days here soon. He may be up in Chicago for that. No doubt. But how have you been?
I was just on a pod with Mike. So you've got Mike and I on the same day. And the fact that you have me back means that I didn't whiff too bad on the first one. So I'm more than happy to be back on. It's great to talk to you again.
No, you're one of the few national guys that to me, I look at that just view things for how they are. You know, if you look at ESPN, all the stuff that comes out of there, there's a lot of SEC Kool-Aid. Kirk Herbstreit has no doubt drank the Kool-Aid. He has gone to the dark side, so to speak. And I hate that. I would love to just see it, because it's such a great game right now. The sport of college football is incredible. And I wish everybody would just view it as it is and wipe away what it says on the jersey, whether it says Indiana or Missouri. Who cares? If they're good, they're good. Look at what they are. Because I mentioned earlier with Mike, all these AP poll writers that had Texas, Penn State, and Clemson numbers one, two, and four in the preseason poll, and they're not even in the poll anymore. So it just open your eyes and just take it in. But I think you do an exceptional job of that, and always a pleasure to have you on. We're very fortunate. Obviously a big matchup this weekend with Indiana and Oregon that can't be ignored. And Indiana, as I've said, they've got to play four quarters. They don't have to win this game. They're not expected to win this game. If they did, it would be incredible. But they do have to, in my opinion, show that they belong in this category, because I think potentially they are one of these three Big Ten elite teams. And the Big Ten has elite teams, but the SEC has a bunch of good teams.
To me, the ante or the buy-in to get in the playoffs is going to be 10 wins out of these conferences. Later this week, I'm going to break down the SEC, the rest of the schedule, and kind of project what I think teams are going to be, and do the same for the Big Ten. And right now, I mean, I'll give you a spoiler. I think there are three 10-win teams in the Big Ten. I think Oregon, Ohio State, and Indiana are those teams. So if Indiana, even like you said, I like how you put it. Like, so I wouldn't view Indiana that much differently if they went out to Oregon and lost like 38-27. I'd say, yeah, they competed, and that's a tough place to win, and Oregon's very, very good. Now, if Oregon does something in the neighborhood of what they did to Oklahoma State, which I don't think they will, perceptions start to change a little bit. But, you know, like I said, 10 wins will get you there, and I'm starting to rethink the Indiana-Penn State game, and maybe that's an emotional reaction to the weekend, but how can you, Jim, how can you not have an emotional reaction to what happened out at UCLA this weekend?
It was shocking to me. Normally, I said normally you could look at that as you would have expected that to have been a trap game because of what happened to them, the emotion of that loss, where it was at home with the whiteout and the travel all the way across the country. But they were playing UCLA, who stunk, who hasn't hardly won a game in two seasons, had one all year, just fired their coach, their offensive coordinator, their defensive coordinator. There's no way they could be together and organized. And boy, did they shock the world, every one of us. And I'm like, wow. I'm still shocked that they lost, that they weren't able to come back and win that game. But because I think that may be the beginning of the end for James Franklin, because he still has to play Ohio State and Indiana. And even if he wins one of two of those games, they're out of the, probably out of the CFP, because they're not going to have the 10 wins.
And you mentioned, like, that was my visceral reaction to Saturday. And it wasn't just that they lost. It's like UCLA gave them multiple opportunities to get back in the game, kicking a 56-yard field goal attempt that led to a Penn State touchdown, a blocked punt, even going for it on fourth down in your own territory and not getting it. And I'm like, at what point is Penn State going to win this game, like 41-40, and just move on with their life? And you know, here's something Mike and I were talking about earlier this morning I'd love to run by you. When the Colts go out to the West Coast and lose, there aren't Colts fans that say, oh, it was the travel. You know, and if we're going to have professional college football, they're going to have to figure it out. To me, this travel thing is very real in the Big Ten. It's very real going east to west. It's been like that my whole life, honestly. But that was for one game. So these Big Ten teams are going to have to figure out how to travel and how to do it like professional teams. Michigan's a great example this weekend. They're going out early. They're going to stay at Jim Harbaugh's house with the Chargers. And then they're going to go play USC at the Coliseum. But you've got to win these games.
Yeah, I asked Kurt about that. I wish I could find it in the clip from yesterday on this presser. But I asked him specifically. I said, hey, you've done this before. Last year you had to go out for UCLA. It was his first Big Ten game. And it was kind of the coronation of Kurt Cinetti. You know, him running off the field to there was a bunch of Indiana fans that actually went to that game. And it was just kind of unexpected. This was like, wait, whoa, what? This is not Indiana anymore. But they mitigated that travel. And I asked him about, you know, does it matter the time of day that these games are going on? Because this is going to be an earlier game on top of that. It will be 12:30 out on the coast, 3:30 Eastern time. But I think that they really just go out there and you stay on your own time. You go to bed when you go to bed normally. You get up when you get up and you get ready to play and you forget about what the clock says. And I think that they've really worked on mitigating that, because there is something to it in college, it seems to be. And I also asked Matt Taylor with the Colts about it. But he said, you know, they learned to adjust and deal that, because you also see them going to foreign countries and playing.
Right.
So you've just got to you've got to ignore that. And you've just got to be ready for anything and can't use it as an excuse.
And I think they leaned into that. I will give them the first quarter. Saturday, I would say, okay, yeah, the Oregon hangover and 10-0 after the first quarter didn't surprise me. But when that bled into the second half, I'm like, what's going on here? And to your point, I mean, I was talking about that earlier, that 10 wins is required. If 10 wins is the required playoff ante, then yeah, this is a huge game for Michigan and USC this weekend, because one of those teams is going to have two losses and very little margin for error. Team like Illinois, that got blitzed by Indiana right after the last time I came on your show. It's a big game for them this weekend in terms of they could still go 10-2, but if Ohio State does what Indiana did to them, they'll get disregarded as well, no matter how well they play the rest of the season. It's a very interesting country in the Big Ten. Here's something I want to run by you, and I'd love to get your thoughts, honestly. I think the top half of the Big Ten is fine. you know, the top half of the Big Ten is comparable to the top half of the SEC, in my opinion. The problem is when you get down to like 9, 10, 11, 12, it's a little bit rougher on the Big Ten side. So the bottom half of the Big Ten is worse than the SEC.
It's horrible. I've put out posts about that. I've talked about it, that the Big Ten, I still think the Big Ten wins the national championship again for the third consecutive season, which is amazing. But the SEC has really got it. There's a lot of parity there. They will probably get a minimum of five teams in deservingly into this college football playoffs this year because of their parity. We don't know who the best SEC team is. Still don't. Which that's just, I think that's part of what the transformation of college football we've seen, this great parity just spread out, and which has made it a ton of fun, although it's still the two big conferences that are dominating this, but that parity is starting to seep in. And the SEC or the Big Ten, they got to get their butt in gear. Teams like USC who look good, they've got to be good. Michigan has got to get back to being good. Nebraska, they keep just, you know, hanging on the edge. They just can't get over, I hate to say get over the hump. That's a Mike Woodson thing that we had to deal with for the last 4 years. But they just can't do that. It's like, man, Matt Rule just kind of can't get them there. They're close, but last year they lost one game coming in Indiana, and Indiana just, you know, beat the snot out of them. Didn't win another game until the last game of the year to become bowl eligible. But there are just too many programs that have to continue to rise up. Illinois, doing well, got to get better. Iowa, I think it's a time for a change at Iowa. I know that Iowa fans would probably half of them agree and half of them riot, but yeah, Kirk Ferentz has been an unbelievable coach, unbelievably consistent winner, but he does not have Iowa anywhere close to being on the path to being in this category or in this conversation. So I think it's time for a change at Iowa.
Well, in that middle class, who moves up and who moves down? I mean, Washington's better, but they're not what they, I mean, they did play for a national championship just a few years ago, and then their coach leaves for Alabama. But I think you're spot on with Iowa, because they can win eight games and they can win nine games, but that Indiana win there was a little bit of a shift. In the past, Kirk Ferentz probably wins that game, and then we, you know, gets to nine. But the way that Indiana was able to execute late, didn't love the safety at the end, but we don't have to get back into that. But for those of us who do picks at Sporting News each week,
that pounded Indiana's rushing average for the day. He ended up losing in total 49 yards on the day. And I'm like, that's terrible. Right. I don't understand why. Part of it was because there was a misunderstanding about, and I didn't know this. I've said honestly that I didn't know that there was a rule against how you can, in your victory formation, on exactly what you can do. You could be called for a flag for delay of game or in essence or something crazy. So that's part of it. But that was a weird finish.
It was, but the larger point to me is it showed that, yeah, maybe it's time for a change at Iowa, because here's a guy, Kurt Cignetti, where, you know, this weekend for the Big Ten traditionalist out there, I've gotten this question a few times. Is this good for the Big Ten? It's great for the Big Ten that Oregon and Indiana are on this stage. It's really good for the Big Ten that Oregon and Indiana have two of the top five winning percentages in college football since the start of last season. I know that's a convenient statistic. I understand that. But Ohio State being where they're at, and they look like they're historically good on the defensive side of the ball this year. I've always maintained, I may have said it last time I was on here, that the healthiest thing that can happen for the Big Ten is for somebody other than Ohio State or Michigan, two programs that I've watched my whole life, to win a national title. You know, Penn State hasn't won one since 1986. Nebraska hasn't won one since those 90s runs. USC 2004-05. Oregon hasn't won one yet, you know, so for Indiana to emerge, it's great. You need, because that's why the SEC has that image to this day, is they've spread out the national titles. My lifetime, it's been three Ohio State national titles, one and a half, you could argue, Michigan national titles within the conference. So they need somebody else to win it.
Yeah, and make sure you go to the Sporting News and check out Bill's content. He, not just college football, but all of football, NFL. He's got his picks out for the college this week. A ton of those there as well. How did you do last week? I want to know before I maybe use your information.
You know what? Because it's been so wild this year, it's been a struggle against the spread. It's been
it's crazy.
Last week was good. I was, I think, 9-6 or 10, you know, NFL picks have been easier this year.
Although that those games have been crazy close, and they had all these comebacks as well.
So here, like, I'll why I don't stress out about these anymore. So college has been wild. NFL last week, I was 6-8 straight up, but 10-4 against the spread. So it's like, was that a good or bad weekend? I can't
tell.
That's
a good weekend.
Yeah. And then, so college, it's been rough. There was a stretch there where you're trying to figure out like the Indiana safety or the couple backdoor covers, but it's been really tough to predict. And you know what? I think that's great too. You know, my ego aside, when your record is low, that means college football has been super exciting, because I tend to pick, like you said, what I think is going to happen, what it is. And when it curves off of that, it's a great thing.
The Oregon game, you've got Oregon 31-20 over Indiana covering the spread, which very well may happen. A low scoring game for two high octane offenses, but both of these teams very good defensively. And I think that gets overlooked a lot.
You know what? Something I missed, and I think you had Zach on last time I came on, and he was pointing to the amount of tackles for loss Indiana gets and how aggressive their defense is. And that stuck with me into watching that Illinois game, and they were piling those up. Oregon's very good on the defensive front. That's what stood out. I was at the Penn State game a couple weeks ago, and they're not like, he's trying to build them like Georgia, where they're strong on the interior with Bear Alexander, where Mateo Uiagalelei, he's a problem on the edge. Their secondary is good. And here's where I think this game's going to be really interesting. And when we get to third and fourth down, Indiana, one of the best at converting, fourth in the country and converting third down. So they're not even getting to fourth down because they're so good on third. And we know Dan Lanning's going to go for it on fourth down. You know,
as is Kurt Cignetti, unfortunately.
Yeah. So the punters may just stay in the locker room for this one. And that's going to make it fun. But I do think it's going to be a little more defensive. A lot. I could see this game being a slightly more offensive game than Penn State Oregon was. And just for Indiana, it's just don't let that crowd get into it early, because that is a very tough place to play. Aside from the travel, I've heard for years, you know, the noise, it really does bother teams if it can get on you.
Amazingly, it's about the same size as Indiana's right. Memorial Stadium from a capacity wise, but it is a bowl and it is built in on the side of a hill. So apparently the noise just reverberates and it's extraordinarily loud. Bill, I cannot thank you enough as always. Love having you on anytime that you're available. Love your content. Make sure you're going to the Sporting News and checking it out, NFL as well as college. The Colts, man, they're rolling as well. So next time I got to talk about them with you as well, because man, they're one of the surprises of the NFL season.
I love having Jonathan Taylor on my fantasy football team. He's been great for me. And, that Daniel Jones has been wonderful. That AFC looks for the first time in a while, very wide open. So the Colts are going to be a factor there, along with Jacksonville with the big win last night.
How about that last touchdown? I've never seen a quarterback, talked about it earlier, gets his foot stepped on. So he goes down, stumbling backwards, falls to the ground, tries to get up, falls down again, then gets up, escapes a tackle out of the scrum there and is able to score the winning touchdown. It was like, that could not have been any more screwed up, but it worked.
Oh, it literally took my breath away watching it. I was like, oh, he's going to fall down. And then he scrambles in. What a fantastic finish to the week. And I know, you know, like next time I come on, we can get into it more, but man, the NFL just delivers every weekend. It really does, because you're got, and it's even better now. I think that the Chiefs are a little bit you know, on the cusp or on the brink of maybe not being that Super Bowl championship contender anymore, it's really opened up possibilities for everybody else. I think it's made it fun.
Bill, besides the sporting news and making sure you're being followed on Twitter at BillBender92, where should people look for your content, brother?
Yeah, I mean, you'll find that sporting news. Mike DeCourcy, who you had on earlier, he's got a column about the quarterback play in college football coming out today. I'll have kind of sizing up the SEC and the Big Ten race. We'll have midseason All-Americans next week. Midseason All-Americans, Jim, we're already at the midway point. How crazy is that?
Nuts. We're going to end up on Jimmy Kimmel by saying that he always does. I was talking about that earlier. Every time they get a bunch of news clips from people, every anchor, can you believe it's August? Can you believe it's August? They're always saying that. Well, Heisman Trophy race. I think the Heisman Trophy race is as level as well as it can be right now, because to me, there is no favorite. I don't care what other people say. Fernando Mendoza is in it. Dante Moore is in it. Julian Sayre is in it. Several others as well. There is no clear favorite to me right now.
Well, and five of the top eight quarterbacks in passer rating are in the Big Ten. And you just said three of them, right? Julian Sayre, you know, 80.2 completion percentage. I mean, I don't think I could go outside and throw 8 out of 10 passes to somebody with, well, I'm 46, so that's my excuse. But you get what I'm saying. That's
yeah, incredible. This is not your grandpa's Big Ten, man. This is not the old 3 yards in a cloud of dust.
Right, and Mendoza is in that mix. Like you said, Dante Moore. Jaden Maiava, actually, USC. That's for those that haven't watched him really play, you'll get the up close against Michigan in primetime this week. I want to see how he does against that defense. I think Dylan Raiola is good. He's not in the Heisman conversation, but I think he's good. So for as many years as the Big Ten has been this punching bag for quarterbacks, even Luke Altmyer, Bryce Underwood, Luke Altmyer, they've got some pretty good quarterbacks this year, and that's been fun.
7 out of the top 12 are in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
It's completion percentage. That's nuts, and it starts at 79%. For Ohio State, man, that's just wild. That means that's part of why I think that the Big Ten is just better than the SEC right now. They're not deeper, but they're better at the top, and that just makes them better. I think that they're going to win a national championship, but we'll see. We got plenty of time for that. Make sure you're following Bill Bender and keeping up with this content, because it's great stuff. Bill, I thank you as always. Look forward to hopefully doing this again in a few weeks.
Hey, anytime. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, sir. Bill Bender joining us from the Sporting News. Make sure you're giving him a follow. Like I said, it's great stuff. If you want to stay locked in. In addition to that, make sure you're going to thehoosier.com. We're back tomorrow to do this again. Let's see. I can't remember who all I've got locked in tomorrow, but I know Kyle Nenrip and Zach Browning will be with us, but we'll get some special guests lined up as well. As always, hope you have a great rest of your day. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.